It's Wednesday, September 5th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 68 of Fear the Boot, the show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot, where we're working hard to put the ass back in Flassy. My name is Dan.
My name is Adam.
My name is John.
My name is Luke.
And my name is Tex.
All right, we got two quick announcements, and then we're down to it. First of all, I want to send a thanks out to Zachary from over on the Groovecast, because while we were out at Gen Con this year...
Drinking.
Took some time to come back to the hotel room with me.
And do that other thing people do.
And actually helped me with some of the condenser and mixer problems we've been having. So...
Is that what the kids are calling it?
So, I'm sorry, compressor and mixer. Condenser is the mic. Compressor and mixer problems we've been having. So I want to thank Zachary from over at the Groovecast for...
Making us sound more sexy.
Making us sound even more sexy.
We should also thank him for helping me carry your Steak and Shake back to you.
Okay, we can thank him for that too. Tex, I'd be thanking you this episode if you'd gone out and bought the damn mixer, but you didn't. So
it's on my to-do list, but... You know, I guess just by contrast, now you guys can sound that much better.
Okay.
Oh, we do. Don't worry.
Since there are no other local St. Louis cons planned for the weekend of October 6th, you just count out Festivus Con and the Squash Game Night, we have a third one to announce, which is FlatCon from October 5th through 7th at the Interstate Center in Bloomington, Illinois. You can find all the information on that at www.flatcon.com. So if you live in the St. Louis area and for some reason don't like the other two cons, go to that one.
I'm going to bias everybody here because I'll be running a game at Festivus Con, and it's going to be awesome.
So I'm going to play in it.
I think these two are going to play. Dan's got a wedding.
I'm playing.
So
yeah,
it's going to be good. History's Heroes versus the Temperance League. It's going to be a rock and roll adventure through time.
I can't attend any of these cons because Carla's brother, obviously my brother-in-law, is getting married on October 6th.
So you know, if you kill Carla, you no longer have any obligations.
He'll probably get married again.
That's
He'll be
true.
Fine.
If I kill Carl, I also lose some other assets that we can't say within our rating.
Watch Divorce Italian Style. It can be done. It's an old movie.
So anyway,
go ahead.
All right. Well, I'll let something kind of slip here. We have been talking, or at least I've been talking to the guy that does all the Atomic Squash stuff about possibly getting together a Fear the Boot sponsored game night here locally sometime. We're looking at maybe like early to mid-February. So that we have plenty of time to work through this, maybe see if some local game stores, we've got a couple in mind, might jump on the bandwagon and sponsor it as well.
You mean the same thing Adam and I have been talking about for months now?
Yeah, the difference is I'm actually going out and doing it, whereas you guys just sit around and talk smack.
We're planning.
Yeah. You're busy fixing eyes, Adam's busy mowing lawns, and I'm out there planning cons. So.
All right, fair enough.
And I'm playing StarCraft.
Are you done with your announcements?
I am done with my announcements.
I have two announcements.
Oh,
what?
Announcements are boring.
Melina's pregnant.
No, she's not.
Yeah, you're right. She's not.
Yeah, you're.
But it was shocking.
No, it wasn't shocking.
You would have been smiling if that was true.
Yeah, you're right.
You wouldn't be here.
Yeah, probably
wouldn't
be here.
You'd have had a lot more drinks at dinner.
You'd be upstairs right now digging through drawers looking for one of my guns. So I know for a fact Melina's not pregnant. So
the first announcement I have is I want to send out a thank you to all the people who attended the StarCraft Night of Carnage that Luke planned and then didn't show up at.
I'm sorry I double booked that weekend. Sorry. I won't have it.
You were booked until 21-12.
Boom, boom.
What?
I didn't get it either.
Luke and I were making a rush joke.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's about a band.
And I'd just like to say that Mr. Keith Curtis is as gracious on vent as he is on the forums.
Oh, really? I've never talked to him voice to voice. I've just talked to him through emails and PMs and stuff. But never talked to him voice to voice. Speaking of Keith Curtis, though, that does remind me, and I want to throw a sub-announcement in here before you get to
good, because I can't remember what the second announcement
okay,
was
well, great.
To save my life.
Then Adam's second announcement is that by the time this show drops, I will actually be matching up the artist commissions with the commission pieces. I've been sitting on that for a while just because so much else has had me distracted, but I still am quite serious about that, so you will be getting those emails very soon, like within the next couple of days, if you have not already. I have worked out a list of the pictures. I have got a list of the people that have sent in submissions. You'll be getting a response here shortly, and I apologize for the long display. It's just life has not been kind to me for the past month or month and a half. So.
And speaking of emails, I'd like to thank all the folks who sent me an email, both for my request and the flood of them I got after Gen Con from folks who picked up Savage Worlds on my recommendation. I love you guys. We got to all get together and play sometime now.
All right. Well, since we're all doing announcements, I'd like to wish everyone a happy 10th anniversary of Judgment Day. August 29th, 1997 was 10 years ago last Wednesday when you're listening to this. So I hope you still have your 2 million sunblock.
By the way, I have a question about an announcement.
What's that?
Well, are we planning another Worldwide Wing Night? The reason I ask is a number of my local Fear the Boot listeners have inquired about setting up a West Coast expansion. So I was thinking when you guys do Worldwide Wing Night, we could do Worldwide Trendy, Labor-Intensive, Overpriced, Caffeinated, High-Fat, High-Sugar Coffee Drink Night.
That's crappy. That's a terrible idea.
You're ruining the holiday.
Yeah. No, actually what the holdup is one, we're busy with some other things.
Many other things. Which hopefully will be resolved in the next 2 weeks.
Secondly, the other thing that's kind of holding us up is I want to try and get the other gaming podcasts on board and make this a podcasting holiday, not just a Fear the Boot holiday.
This isn't an interview. I don't have to set it up.
Well, right. But the point is, though, that the same things that are keeping me from getting back to my commission artists are keeping me from writing that post to the podcasters group.
Well, that and the Worldwide Wing shortage right now.
Yes.
Speaking of things keeping you from getting back to real work.
Wing mines have gone dry. What?
World of Warcraft. Let me explain something to you boys, if you haven't already figured it out.
Here we go.
I am manic depressive when it comes to World of Warcraft. I will play it hard for 4 months, and then I will trash it for the next 8. Well, guess what? It's manic time. We are starting up a World of Warcraft Fear the Boot Guild again.
Here we go.
Part 2.
The John and Adam version, which is to say Horde PvP.
Yes.
On Ursin.
Yes.
So come join us, kick it around. Probably won't be anything serious or intensive, but...
Very casual. I'm Beth Adam. Look me up.
Right. I am Hardvark.
All right.
1A.
Which is funny in and of itself. Yeah. But,
can you really PvP casually?
Yes, you can. In Warcraft, when you're a warlock, you can PvP very casually.
Post-BC, you can PvP not at all, Azeroth.
In not Outland, yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, Ursin, URSIN, Horde yeah. side. I don't know that I'll even be joining this. I might drop by, I might not.
I'll kick your ass out.
I'll pop into the vent channel once again and then immediately log off.
I'm still kind of holding out for the Koan and MMO, though we might have another MMO we play in the meantime, but that's we'll talk about that sometime.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I probably won't join you either because I've accepted the Find a Girlfriend quest.
Oh, have you?
Yes, I have accepted the quest.
You can actually do that and play WoW.
You should find a girlfriend on WoW. We talked about this.
It's the only quest you get.
And
upon
hope it's actually a girl.
You have to pay gold.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. You lose XP and pay gold.
I accepted the Find Chris Hussey's Stolen Bikes quest, but we can't talk about that one on the air. Speaking, though, of things that really probably shouldn't be talked about on the air, D&D 4th Edition.
Why are we talking about this? Let's not.
You guys seen Star Wars Saga Edition?
Does anyone
imagine that in D&D.
Yeah, does anyone here have a reaction that's not ho-hum?
No. You know, when 3rd Edition was announced, I remember the excitement in the air. I remember the buzz. I remember how excited people were. And when they announced 4E, I remember just to hear the pin drop because nobody cared because 3.5 came out,
I want to live in your world because you make it sound like when 3E was announced, it was like there was something sexual energy.
It almost was. You know, when right about that time, you know, 2nd Edition was getting old. And
Gen Con.
2nd Edition was way old.
Yeah,
it was like 20 years old.
When they said they made it a production when they announced 3E, kind of like they did here, only people cared back then, and it was just phenomenal, and everybody got excited.
Chris Hussey talked about that when he was on the air with us. I say on the air like we're broadcasting. But
I didn't listen to that episode. I just edited it.
When he was on the podcast with us, he talked about being there at the launch party for that and all the shot glasses they were giving out and all this kind of stuff.
They were dripping articles about the classes and in the Dragon magazine. One by one, everyone was going crazy.
The designers were like rock stars. I mean, it was the biggest thing to happen in gaming in years, probably since White Wolf came on board. And then 4E is just, I mean, granted, I probably won't buy 4E. I might, unless somebody's running it, because I'm not going to ever run a D&D game again, I think, unless it's Rule Cyclopedia. But when they announced it, they're saying some things I actually do like. They're making it easier to GM. They're making magic items a lot less prevalent.
How can you make GMing easier?
I don't understand that. Well, that sounds to me like there are more rolling charts and less.
Have you ever
thinking.
Tried to DM 3E
now?
Yeah, no. I can do it very easily.
3E, all the huge stat blocks, all the work that goes into prep. I don't want to work on the numbers, and that's all.
Don't make encounter charts. You'll get NZBs. Just whip it out.
the only thing I found as a GM that really irritated the hell out of me in third edition was challenge ratings.
They're getting rid of that.
They're like stupid.
The challenge ratings were entirely unnecessarily too complicated. I mean, no, it's not like it's the hardest thing in the world, but it's because I don't play one game repeatedly that I'll put D&D down for a while and pick it up a year later. I could never remember the challenge rating computation, and that I just give me a damn XP value.
Yeah,
everyone awards XP by fiat.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm excited about some of the stuff they're saying. Like, there are actually some of those things that appealed to me. I like the new setting is going to be kind of a dark, you know, more sword and sorcery civilization.
Setting.
Yeah, the inherent setting. D&D has an implied setting that really, the rules that the world implies on D&D and D&D implies on the rules where it's wacky, people memorize spells, that kind of thing. That carries forth from edition to edition. It looks like they're finally going to ditch some of that stuff, and I'm looking forward to it, but not that much. Yeah.
Ditch it for figs. Upgrade! Yeah,
they actually will be moving at 6 squares in 4th edition, I guarantee.
And the online aspect, talk about one thing I don't want to invest in. Sorry, I don't want to read articles online. I don't want to pay for stuff.
You don't want to go on Gleemax?
Yeah, Gleemax is free, though.
They should have named Gleemax Mother Brain, and I would have logged right onto it. I would be the frothing at the mouth.
You'd
supporting.
Be Samus7763.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'd be Ridley. Ridley's spiky tail.
I'd be your Kraid, baby.
Closest I ever got to Samus.
Yeah, so 4E, I'll watch, but I'm not excited about it.
I get 4E a ho-hum. If somebody puts a book in my lap and I look through it and it's really cool, okay, maybe my response will change.
It had to be embarrassing for designers to get that response.
I'm not negative against it, per se, but it's just, like I said, it's ho-hum. I just don't
know. No, the best response was Thursday night at Gen Con, Daniel Perez comes in. He's like, oh, they've announced 4th edition. Okay, where's registration?
All right, let me talk about something. This is a freebie that I got at Gen Con that I am excited about.
Admiral Akbar?
No.
I've already waved my little Admiral Akbar at like 3 different people and said it's a trap.
Well, I
what
got
about
a free...
your D&D USB disc?
That's sitting on my desk as of yet unopened.
I took Pulse. It's in my pocket.
I got use out of mine. Now, the Admiral Akbar I didn't do anything with. The Maeslin Regeer I didn't...
Maeslin Regeer.
Raceland, I'm sorry, let's try
dude,
that.
Trampas is going to kick
you. Let's try
butt.
That without the Listexia. Raceland Magier, I didn't do anything with. And
I threw that thing away.
The USB thing, I used it to transfer a copy of a submission I'm working on from one computer to another so I could discuss it with the pimp of the internet, Mr. Tony Mast. And the World of Warcraft box set for the cards, I still need to open just to see if I have any scratch-off cards, because those eBay for a good amount of money, but you actually have one. But no, what I am excited about is the guys over at Pulp Gamer, which is another podcast for those of you guys not familiar with it. The guys over at Pulp Gamer gave me these freebie accent CDs that teach you how to do British accents, Scottish accents, and Irish accents.
Huh.
Like, if as you as an American...
So British and Scottish accents.
All right, let me rephrase this.
Okay.
Queen's English.
There you go.
Cockney.
Thank you.
Scottish and Irish.
Brilliant.
Okay, so let me try that again with the proper breakdown here, the proper strata. It teaches you to start with...
Trolls speak Cockney, by the way. It's universal.
I suppose an American accent. And it teaches you how to actually go into those accents. So the reason that I found this hysterical when they gave it to me is twofold. One, just because it's cool to be able to speak in accents and do so well. But secondly, because of the fact that there's a stereotype, which is, like most stereotypes, largely based in reality, that people who get into role-playing or first get into role-playing, for some reason, all of their characters, at least in America, have these really bad Queen's English accents. And it pleases me to see someone put out CDs on how to actually do these right. And these CDs were apparently put together by someone that's made a real linguistic study of it. And we don't normally plug products on this podcast, but I just got such a kick out of these CDs that if you're into this kind of thing at all, whether for role playing or for theater, stop by over at the Pulp Gamer website and we'll link to it in the show notes and check out these two CDs. I think they're great.
Can you demonstrate some of what you've learned?
No.
Do it.
No.
Don't do it.
No. Tex, you were lived in Germany. Can you do a German accent for us?
Yeah, you actually have to speak more with the front of your mouth. Surprisingly, compared to German, English is a very lyrical language.
I'm not hearing an accent. I'm hearing description of how to speak it. Just do it.
You know what I want to hear from you right now, Tex?
Oh, you can't mock Dan, so you're going to line me up instead.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, who is that little duck on Disney that's a ripoff of Freud?
Oh, that duck. I used to know his name. But
yeah.
Oh.
All righty. Let's get to something more controversial then. Luke, GNS. Now, as people who are deeply tapped into the role-playing industry, though I do have to thank Mr. Dancy for tracking me down at Gen Con. He was, in fact, my date to the podcaster meet and greet.
You talked to, like, three people at...
Yeah, I did.
Don't worry. I talked to everyone.
I know. I went to that podcaster meet and greet.
I have those pictures on my Facebook now.
I went to that podcaster's meet and greet hoping to meet tons of fans, and basically, there's about three people I ended up talking to for basically the whole 2 hours.
I had a great time at that reception. I got to relive my childhood.
Italian beer.
Because I talked to one of our female listeners about Robotech for about 90 solid minutes and had a blast. Because she actually knows specific episodes. And she likes Macross over that Mospita crap that you like.
Though? You mentioned female with a certain aplomb.
Yeah.
No, I was just, one, impressed that we have female listeners. I didn't know we had any. And two, I was just astounded.
No, he's never out on the forum. Dude, he doesn't know
Tex,
that female.
Post count under 100.
Right, yeah. Tex, you need...
I was mainly astounded to find out that she could intelligently discuss Macross since I get so sick of listening to you go on about Mospita.
Okay. Now, it may shock you to learn that actually with on our forums, we have discussion areas other than video games. And
there's a host area.
Yes, there's also a host area.
You should post there, too.
You also should consider visiting general discussion.
I posted there today.
You should also consider visiting episodes, announcements, introductions, discussions.
I camp episodes like a madman Wednesday night.
Introductions.
Adam and I found out today in the episodes thread
that's right.
That he and I have a fangirl.
Yes, and it's a toss-up.
Welcome to the club, boys.
She says it's a toss-up.
Yeah, it's going to be a fight to the death.
So now it's just me and Ted and the fangirl.
We don't know anything about her, but Adam and I discussed this, and the conclusion I came to is it's like one of those eye puzzles, you know, where depending on how you focus your eye, you see the old woman or the young woman. It's going to be like that, except what she looks like is depending on how you focus your eyes. Adam sees Chloe, and I see Jennifer Walcott. And
I couldn't see the old woman in that picture for like 10 years.
Really?
Really. You know, one day it just came to me and I was like, oh my God, it's there.
You know what I think is complete crap and total power of suggestion is those magic eye things.
They are not. That's
no,
real.
They're real.
That's science.
He's a real doctor.
Sucker.
They were. He's a real doctor.
That's science.
His name is Dr. Meyer.
If I wouldn't bore you with it, I explain exactly how those work, but it's boring.
He's an eye doctor. Magic eye.
Sucker.
Oh.
Oh, wait. Logical fallacy here. Appeal to authority. Mm. Nope.
Oh, get out of here.
They're all scam. It's power suggestion.
Are we going to talk about something legitimate?
All right.
Bonus
fine.
Kick your straw man's ass.
Logical fallacy. My ass.
Write down the separate scope. Write down it.
Credible source. Oh.
GNS. Luke, first of all, for those of us that, you know, are really tapped into the industry.
For those of us who told you we have an opinion on this and really don't, tell us what this is that we have an opinion
on. So first of all, educate us on what GNS is, and then we'll tell you why we don't like it.
I love it. Since I've been on the podcast, I'm all of a sudden the Wikipedia of gaming resources here.
No, you're the Wikipedia of gaming resources post-1995.
That's true, I guess.
Go for
you
that.
Need to start a sentence with a noun so I can start developing an opinion.
Yes.
Look, as GNS,
a negative one.
I never actually got through all of GNS theory because it was so condescending that I just got pissed and quit reading it about halfway through.
I'm lying.
It sounds like a tech improvement from
Alpha
Centauri.
So I'd visit the Forge forums where this was kind of birthed. It's a independent gaming forum that it's become pretty popular in the last few years.
Okay.
And it's pretty much the same attitude around there, too, that it's actually in concept a neat thing. GNS theory. It's terminology to help define what kind of games you want.
What does GNS stand for?
Gamer Narrativist Simulationist.
Okay.
So the three different types of gamers.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be lingo so you can determine exactly what you are. Are you...
Is this like a Myers-Briggs personality test for
your
gaming fetishes?
No, I mean, you determine it yourself. Do you like narrativist games? Do you like to tell stories? Or do you like simulationists where you're, you know, trying to do stuff all the time? And the original essay about all this pretty much says all of these are bad.
So GNS is basically three classifications of gamers.
Yeah, it's three classifications that can mix and match, but the problem's not so much with the idea behind it But the people and the wanking about it, about how, oh, it's all academic. We're thinking about games, and it's a big deal.
They did that with MUDs.
We're
doing
a
it
subculture.
With MMOs.
We don't want to be labeled. I don't want you to put me into a container with other people because I am a unique individual.
That's not it at all. You know what this is? It's all about one thing. It's masturbation. That's all it is. Thinking about games like that. It really has no use. It's just, it's fun for people to waste their time on. It's just masturbation.
Well,
that's it.
All right.
I don't understand the outrage, though. That's what gets me.
What outrage?
What do you mean, what outrage?
Okay, so, well, it's, well, if you visit the forums and read this stuff, you might be outraged, too.
Okay, why?
You're dumb. It's the condescension.
You hate masturbation.
Waves and waves of condescension
that
weigh me down.
Condescension. What kind of condescension?
Basically, they're saying, here, put yourself into one of these three game types.
Okay.
And then, all these three game types suck. You're a horrible person. You kill puppies. You ate a baby yesterday.
Luke, I'm trying very hard to get riled up here, but I gotta tell you, man, my apathy runneth over.
Welcome to my take on this topic.
I'm gonna cut the difference here a little bit.
Oh, here we go.
All right.
I'm not. Rubber hits the road. Venn diagram.
I don't hate the idea of GNS theory. It's just the attitude that comes along with it.
I find it, it's human nature that anything you care about, you're going to want to investigate, study, and understand. All right. When we talked to Ryan Dancy in the past, I mean, he made a whole study out of why do people role play and how do they role play and whatever. And this GNS thing sounds like a fan-driven initiative to basically do the exact same thing. That instead of a corporate-sponsored study or whatever, that it's people sitting around doing the same thing. So on the one hand, this does not surprise me or upset me. But having said that, I guess back you up on that thought a little bit again. You know, I can look at people like Mick Bradley, who talk at great length about how role-playing fits into these great cultural and mythological traditions. And
the difference between him and the guy who came up with this GNS theory is that Mick Bradley's a gamer.
Well, the two things that I would say are different, at least from what I understand, is one, there's a difference between interest and being pedantic. And secondly, I'd say there's a difference between being interested and becoming a pedagogue. And it strikes me, at least
you can become a pedantagogue.
Or a pedophiliagogue. But it strikes me, It strikes me, though, Luke, from what you're saying, that they have crossed that line from what should have been an idle observation into something that they just take entirely too seriously. Is that what your basic premise
is? And I'm not picking on anybody in particular, particularly Ron Spencer, the guy who came up with it. Whatever. I'm talking about the mob as a whole. The attitude that comes off of that is that this is serious stuff. This is serious business playing games. And we're gonna,
serious business.
And we're not going to take anything you say seriously unless you talk in our terms and use our lingo, blah, blah, blah.
Welcome
blah.
To academia.
Exactly.
You are a real doctor.
I don't want gaming to be academia. I don't want to deal with that when I game, and I don't. And I don't like how if I'm cruising the internet at various forums that this is punching in place.
You mean like recording 68 episodes of a podcast is kind of overthinking the subject?
But this is fun.
Well, we sit here and make fun of the subject matter.
That's true,
what we do. No, we don't overthink it. I mean, yeah, we might have some systematic approaches or evaluations of some aspect of gaming, but mostly we just make fun of it. And speaking of making fun of things, this would probably be a good point to tell our audience that about 20 minutes into this episode, we have tech Skyped in, of course, and actually Seamus Young, author of DM of the Rings.
Oh my god, he's here.
Whoa. Skyped in as well.
Whoa.
So we have an unexpected host here.
I'm flat-footed for the next 6 seconds.
So, Seamus, right?
Hey, Crucio.
But Seamus, you know, this is something that you could probably speak on, because I look at DM of the Rings, and hear what I see in your comic is very practical gaming advice that's told without taking the art too seriously.
Yeah, I will never be at a risk of taking this too seriously. It's hard for me to take it seriously enough to even write a comic about
it. I know,
that's
you don't even
right
have a beard.
Hey now,
I can't get past the beard thing.
There's no correlation between beardedness and other unseemly characteristic.
Just think, I'm less furry than the rest of you.
I don't have a beard.
Yeah, Luke's
man, I'm the only one that does at the
Luke's
moment.
Got no beard. I mean, not that I've like seen him naked, but he's wearing shorts right now. He's a fairly hairless guy.
Fun fact, I don't grow a beard well. I grow mutton chops like a madman, though.
Dude, where are they?
How could you squander that gift?
You want to go? Do you want to go to Dr. Mutton Chops?
Yes, I do.
Well, you're the only one.
Well, dude, like I would. I am telling you right now, I would abandon my eye doctor and go to you if you do the Mutton Chops.
I'm going to go to that Halloween. That's going to be my Halloween costume. I'll be Dr. Mutton Chops.
If he had Mutton Chops, I would be worried about getting some kind of Victorian cure that he's like, you're nearsighted, and he's going to start applying
leeches
and trying to bore holes.
Here, be a tonic.
Yeah, trying to bore holes in my head and separate my humors. So,
see, and I'd just be worried about the rock and roll, because that's what Mutton Chops means to Luke Meyer.
Really?
The rock and roll.
My dad had Mutton Chops for a long time. And
oh my God, that's awesome.
We harangued
him. I'm sorry, Mutton Chops, rock and roll, and the South. My bad, I should have added that in.
My dad's from the South.
Because nothing says Civil War like Mutton Chops.
Ambrose E. Burnside.
My dad was from the South. The one time my friends and I started singing Dixie, including the verses, we know the verses well, my dad took his hat off. So
how do Mutton Chops work in the South? Because like you need to sweat more down there, like you need more insulation.
I don't know. If we do a bonus episode with my dad, we will ask him about these.
Or we need to find a government grant and send people down there to
figure these things out. All right, so getting back on topic with GNS, is there anything positive you can take away from the whole GNS thing?
Well, the one thing it's trying to do is trying to get gamers to see what kind of games they like and to tell their GMs that. It can open the doors of communication, even though it kind of simultaneously shuts them by making it academic.
Right.
So,
and I guess that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, is I see two sides to this, that on the one hand, it is good to want to understand your hobby, mm-hmm. because through understanding it, you can improve it, you can try to create products or experiences that are tailored to what you like, but you can hit this point where it ceases being a hobby and becomes so pedantic and so nitpicky and so academic that, especially if this is, because most people say, well, wait a minute, just avoid the forge if this bothers mm-hmm. you. But if you're saying now that this even bleeds over into other forums.
And it doesn't all the time, but it bleeds in enough to be bothersome. Because
you know what? I have yet to see anybody quote GNS on our forums.
It's popped up. It's popped up a few times, in fact.
Well, then I didn't even notice
it. I have seen it, but you've also got to keep in mind that our podcast is going to attract a certain kind of person.
True.
You mean the
delinquent
40-year-old guy
you
who
mean
plays Battletech exclusively?
Learned and discerning podcast consumer?
Well, I was more going to say people that have a sense of humor about the hobby.
Well, that's look,
because people that take this hobby real seriously will quit listening to us after about 30 seconds of one episode.
Look,
so
I could tell you, I could come up, you're gonna run a game, I could say, look, I like games that have quite a bit of plot, I like deep role-playing, but you know, I do like to kick in the door occasionally and beat things up. And I could tell you everything that a special term from GNS Theory would have told you.
Next topic for today. And this one, Seamus, actually, I believe you have written comics on. But this is something that was brought up, I can't remember if it's by a host or by a listener, so forgive me now, whoever I'm not crediting. But someone asked about introducing characters or players, so separate terms here, introducing players to a complex setting without boring them.
Oh, this was me.
And here's a good case in point. Yeah, ever since about the year 1997, I have been developing a sci-fi game, which on this podcast we referred to as Danverse. And I've even had people write me emails about Danverse. And actually, Gen Con next year, just for SNG, I may run like a one-shot in this quote-unquote Danverse just so people can see what the universe is like. But because of the fact that I've been developing it over 10 years, there's a huge amount of history that's built up around the game. There's a huge amount of setting. This would be just like diving headfirst into classic Battletech or Dragonlance or any of these other things where there is so much canon piled up around it that your players need to understand a lot of it to play the game. And maybe you're trying to get the players into all of that. But at the same time, you don't want to either A, bore them, or B, lose them. And Seamus, I believe you have made comics on this exact topic.
Well, I mean, that's the crux of DM of the Rings is he's trying to give them the Silmarillion as their character's backstory. And he's trying to give it, and of course, you know, nobody wants to sit through that. Nobody wants to be handed, you know, an epic 4-volume.
No, nobody wants to read the Silmarillion.
It's true. And just expecting, okay, I'm going to expect that you know how this world works and all the politics and everything and how it goes before we can even start the game. And the first thing I would do is if I actually ever used someone else's setting and, you know, wanted to introduce players to it, kind of use the man from Mars gimmick, just say, okay, you guys are from somewhere else. and you are arriving in this setting. Oh, you've crossed the ocean and you're just arriving here. So you don't need, you are already outsiders. You don't, and you're going to be introduced to this world.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Let's go through real quick the problems that surround dumping someone into the heavy setting.
Three of the four guys you're giving the setting to won't remember anything you've said past 5 minutes.
And I, yeah.
Or if you write it out, they won't read it. Or if they do,
and
they
the
won't get past
the one guy
paragraph.
That knows more than you do about the setting will make it hell for them and you.
Yeah. Nobody does that to me with my own settings because I wrote them. But the
nobody
point
does
be,
it to me with Star Wars because you're not going to do it.
Not so.
I think in settings, people fixate too much on the minutiae. The first thing I would do if I was introducing somebody to a system they hadn't played before is start with the feel or the mood or the atmosphere and build up from there.
Before we get to the solutions, let's explore the problem.
We start to pontificate about the problem?
Yeah, let's explore the problem just a little bit.
I haven't yet made fun of things enough
all right.
yet.
Problem number one is that people aren't going to remember it. And Adam, you're saying that even in my own setting, somebody knew more than I did?
Maybe not know more than you did, but used what they knew against you.
Yeah, I will give you that.
Okay. Well, we want to go to this place because we know this is there.
Sometimes they're clever about doing that, though, and you can almost reward them.
So that should be a game master's dream.
I'm starting up a Star Wars. One of my people is working for the Empire and wants to defect, so she made her character from Alderaan. There's her plot hook right there.
The second problem I'd see is they get bored. Problem one is they don't remember. Problem two is they're going to get bored, that you're going to lose their interest. And hand in hand with this, a problem number three is they feel overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And this is one that I have really struggled with. In my case, it's been mostly with female players. I'm not saying this is a female thing. It's just in my
you hate women.
In my case, this is those female characters. That they tend to be a lot more hesitant to play games where they don't know the backstory than ones they do. Like, I have no problem getting Carla to play a Star Trek game because she knows and understands Star Trek. I really have to struggle trying to get her to play games like Forgotten Realms because she feels so overwhelmed by how much there is to know.
So smitten by Elminster.
And so, quote unquote.
You know who's voicing him in the movie?
No.
Kiefer Sutherland.
I think doesn't need to be.
You listened to Dragonlance Canticle.
Yeah, I did.
All right. Before I vomit. The second thing, not over Dragonlance Canticle, by the way, just over Elminster. But the second thing, Dragonlance Canticle, great guys. We met them at Gen Con, so that vomit comment was not directed towards them. Wonderful guys. Go check out their site and their podcast. But getting back on track, the hand-in-hand with boring them is they get overwhelmed by it. And Carla in particular will complain that if she plays a game where she doesn't know her thing, she kind of starts to feel stupid. And even if they don't express it outwardly, I saw it like in the Danvers game where players were very hesitant to do anything because they felt like they knew so little about this voluminous setting or this huge universe that they were afraid that anything they would choose to do would be wrong.
Yeah, I can see that. The bigger problem I see is when half the group knows a lot and the half that doesn't thinks they're going to be operating at a severe disadvantage throughout the whole game. And the tragedy of that is, it's accurate. They are going to be operating at a severe disadvantage.
I played a vampire game like that, where I didn't know enough of the backstory to take advantage of it, and I was a little bit of a disadvantage, but it was still a lot of fun.
All right, if you've got a player or players who are patient and willing to sit back and just accept...
What you just said, if you've got a player, that would be even worse to me, is three people at the table know the setting and one doesn't.
You know what's funny, though, is a few times I've had that, just by luck, the one person who doesn't is usually patient enough that they're willing to sit back and just accept they'll figure it out in time.
That's how I was.
Now,
well,
doesn't
it kind of just turn them into one of those passive players that doesn't contribute much until it's time to start shooting?
No, I was still able to contribute great amounts because we were dealing with plots in a city in Middle Times, and I can deal with that. I may not know the copious amounts of history of Clan X and may not be able to take advantage of, well, they're here right now, I'm going to go use them. But I can still do my own thing with what I do know.
I'd come down on Seamus' side. Just my experience, mm-hmm. once again, has been that, yeah, the players do tend to remain rather passive until they start to figure out enough they can feel like they can contribute something. And I think the GM, if you have a player who's going the loop route where you're mm-hmm. not afraid to dive in, the GM has to cut them some slack. If you don't say this word in the presence of such and such a king, because he was molested by that word as a child, and this player doesn't know that, you have to cut that player some slack. Bully to them for being brave enough to try.
No, Dan, I only run role-play intensive games. With that sort of immersion breaking is met with actual real-life execution.
Yes. A gun comes from beneath the table.
Yes.
And a person leaves in a body bag.
Your games are intense!
I have a duct tape to the back of my old-fashioned toilet. I'm just like, guys, I gotta go. I come back and I kill him. Godfather, please.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Well, I got it.
Okay.
I was going
to. I got it, too. I mean, don't interpret my silence as ignorance.
All right, so let's get this solution, then. Tex, you started giving us a solution, so I'll let you pick up where we cut you off.
Oh, okay, well, my suggestion was that to start with the feel or the atmosphere or the mood of the setting versus the actual details. So rather than bombarding somebody with names and dates and places and maps, perhaps start bombarding them with, this is the atmosphere of the culture that you're in, this is the vibe on the street, something like that. And that way the player can begin to get an emotional attachment before they begin to get an intellectual attachment.
I'd agree with that. I think it's also helpful if the game has some kind of
relatable content.
Yeah, that you can say this, you can talk about how classic Battletech was like feudal Europe and explain, how the mech warriors are like knights and these mechs are like their knighthood, and to lose them is like being stripped of your land or your fief or whatever. Or
you have a military that sits on the very dangerous edge of two warring zones, and then you call them the Argent Dawn from WoW.
See, I run into this a lot because I tend to run a lot of genre matches where there's not a lot of places I can draw, inspirational art and the like from, something to set the mood and set the feel, because it, like I described Renegade Horizon a while back, it's such a mix of different genres that it's really hard to get across in concept, even to me. And that's always a bad sign when you're confused by your own homebrew.
That's bad.
Which is why I dropped it. It was too much for me to handle. My creation got out of control.
You know, I found work because we tried to run two games of my homebrew. One died rather quickly on the vine, and the other one went for several weeks before something unrelated to the game killed it, which we get into personal drama, which is not what this podcast is about.
Sure it is.
But with the first time through, I tried the bombard method. I sat down and I rolled out maps and I had drawings of all the alien races, and
one guy at the table can recite anything that you laid out that day.
Yeah.
And he's sitting right here.
And if you're talking about me, then
I could lay out some things.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. But the point is that
I could find the one with the curious looking organ
for the most part
that everyone comments on.
Yeah, I know. I need to get a new drawing of that alien. But anyway, for anyone who's wondering what we're talking about, there's an alien that floats that has a stabilizing fin and the angle's drawn at.
And it's a clitoris.
It looks like a clitoris. And so
I need to see this before it leaves tonight.
It's pretty funny. You'll look at it and be like, yep.
The point being, though,
he's a doctor.
He knows how to find the clitoris.
I listen to Chef's song.
That's why med school takes 8 years.
Hey, I'm not that kind of doctor. I'm optometry, baby. It only took me 4 after college.
I sat there and bombarded them with all this information and quickly lost or confused the vast majority of people at the table. And so when we started the second one, I decided to try a different tack, which was to start spinning slowly outward. That I started them in a place where it was very easy to relate to. You're in this little localized space station.
Because that's so easy to relate to.
Well, but the point is, if you've watched any sci-fi, the idea of being on a space station is pretty easy to relate to. You are in human space. You're surrounded by other humans. You're in a training facility. You're not immersed in deep politics. And these guys then send you out to, you learn something about the organization you're in through the first game or two and the things that go on there. And then maybe 2 or 3 games in, you bump into another empire. And now I slowly introduce you to some of the cultural tensions that are going on there. And just one game session at a time, I just keep real slowly working the characters outward in this circular fashion until eventually they have started to see the depth and breadth of the galaxy. Now, I still had a little bit of the problem of some more experienced players were trying to second guess what was going on, and they were actually guessing wrong. But the point is that there was still the intention there to abuse knowledge they shouldn't have had as characters, but they did as players.
That's no good. An ambush, if discovered. but they pay back its intended mischief when interest.
But
you know, Dan, I was just thinking your whole comment there on slow circular exploration and leading. We could have swapped out a few nouns, and you could have erotica on tape.
I was trying to work together a dating analogy where it's like, you know, the first gaming session is the coffee date. And then the next one, you take her out to a full dinner, and then before long, she's
well, actually, I was thinking about the first one being a box canyon, but then Dan starts doing his erotic book on tape about, so I just
totally
went with that instead.
I saw Unicron when he was talking.
Dude, I see Unicron.
I saw Venn diagrams.
I see Unicron when I talk, too. Every time I open my mouth, I just black out, see Unicron, and then at some point, I stop talking, and I return to the real world.
Are you a scion of Unicron?
I wish I was. But getting back to Tex trying to drag my analogy back to the clitoris, which is
back to the clitoris.
Deeply shameful of you, Tex.
Am I going to have to bleep this word out because we've used it like 25 times?
No. I think it's, it, well, it's just female
it's not
anatomy.
Obscene.
It's not obscene.
Yeah, it's
obscene
dirty, but it's not obscene.
Yeah.
Obscene.
So I don't,
it's only dirty because we're immature, so
right,
who
yeah,
cares?
Exactly.
That's our listeners' problem, too.
If we had Joyce Myers on instead of Seamus Young or Tex, then this would be completely acceptable language. So, clitoris.
Dude, we like word of the day style laugh. This is
what are we
going to
do? Like
podcast.
A bonus episode of Sue Johansson now?
If we could get her,
that would be totally.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that was
that's crossing the line, Tex. All right,
well,
I'm not on board with that.
There's my
that
advice.
Woman could probably do stuff with a set of gaming dice that I can't even imagine.
Oh, come on. Back to too much plot.
All right. I can roll it without hands. Yeah.
Getting back to
if
this,
it's cold enough.
That's my suggestion is to take the setting. Start small and work your way outward in manageable bites throughout the course of a game. Don't sit down and do massive setting exegesis because you're just going to lose your players. Does anyone else have anything to add to that? Any?
Well, only that the daily Dan exegesis count is now at 2.
Well, along those same lines, speaking of, say, a fantasy setting you're trying to introduce people to, a good place to start is an island that is related to, say, an empire or a major colony, so you get a taste of the world. But it's a very small, bite-sized world that you can handle, or at least something that's isolated.
I guess that's kind of what I was trying to do with the training facility.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, novels deal with this, too. You know, the characters you're reading about understand the world that they're in, but the reader doesn't, and the narrator needs to take breaks. Oh, and explain.
Potter.
There are other books, too, that do this as well, besides Harry Potter.
No.
No, there actually is no other book in the world than Harry Potter. And The Silmarillion, because we mentioned that.
Well, going back to Dan's comment, you know, you can sail away from the island or leave the space station, but if you're playing my game, you're going to end up at another island or another space station, and it's going to be very similar.
It's a box canyon of islands.
I think that you guys are putting too much of the responsibility on the Game Master here. I mean, as a player, you can't not do things just because you don't understand the culture of what's going on.
And I think it's a fair thing to say that some players, particularly the Shire ones, may feel like they're drowning, but...
But
like,
I mean,
Shire like hobbits?
The Shire is the perfect place to start.
Shire's a great place.
No,
what do you find, like one Bree human every 100 years?
Anyway, the point being...
But I mean, it's like that there are going to be other people in the party. You can relate to interacting with other people, hopefully.
Right. I was going to say, I think it's also somewhat incumbent upon the player to say, look, I'm going to interact with the other party members. There are these 3 or 4 things about the world that I do understand I'm going to act upon. Or as these little tidbits come out where the Game Master lets loose a proper noun that you don't understand, that you ask, what is that? Could you explain that? You know, you take some kind of a proactive interest in the world rather than just letting it overwhelm you.
I will say there is a glass ceiling on proper nouns that White Wolf in particular sometimes hits where they're just flooded with proper nouns of this is this, this is that, and it becomes so ingrained in the system that if you Game Master, you just get so used to it that you don't realize people coming in may have no clue, and it really kind of sets you back.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Right, and if you don't want to break out of being in character, you just inquire of your Game Master what the proper noun is, but you do it either in a falsetto or a British accent, and then you're still in character.
Actually, though, I want to go back to something Seamus said, because the more I think about it, I think he had an excellent method there of looking to, what the hell are you guys doing?
Luke just touched my tit. I don't know why.
I was yawning.
You were yawning into my nipple.
If Luke comes to the next podcast recording with a box of popcorn in his lap, don't take any.
I won't.
But it's so good. But getting back to, I think Seamus hit on something great there with the idea of looking to other media as for inspiration on how to handle this. Because a movie or a novel or a TV series is all the same way. That when those that opening song finishes and you're in the first episode, the viewer or the reader or whatever the person may be does not know anything about the world. And yet they have to tackle the exact same problem of they may have this massive detailed world in the back of their head that they have to slowly introduce you to. I guess maybe they have a little bit of an advantage because at least until the reader's caught up, the characters can still behave intelligently. Whereas in a role-playing game, you don't have that.
They can always just cop out and make that, a long, scrolling wall of yellow text and give you a nice Star Destroyer 30 seconds to think about it.
You know, it's like if I have a TV series where you just don't go into the woods because people die there, the characters won't go into the woods, and then I can explain to the viewer or the reader some ways into it why that is. Whereas if...
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that one other common device that television and movies frequently use is you start off with a very vibrant but short and simple action scene. And so that way you've already given the players a little bit of plot, but it's a very simple plot. Like, you know, you're walking down the street and all of a sudden somebody with an umbrella and a penguin falls 60 stories to the street and dies. Well, you don't know, really know what's going on, but you're already excited and curious about that little bit of plot.
No, I'm done playing if that's what happens.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm out of that game.
I'm either on LSD in character, out of character, or I'm stopping the game.
Tell the game master to run a real game. I'll
yeah,
be back
anime
later.
Does that all the time.
But seriously, think about how many television shows you've seen do that in their pilot episode, where they'll, you know, act one, scene one in the pilot episode is going to be a simple but animated and short bit of exciting
plot.
You
can do that. There's some Latin phrase where there's something about pick where a story starts in the middle of an action sequence.
In media res.
Well, yeah, you just give them a hook. I mean, that's if you want them to care about the setting, and you don't want if you don't want to have to badger them to read their own backstories or the world settings. You can just give them a hook, and if it's compelling enough, they'll be like, "Really, I want to know. This is mysterious, and I want to know what the hell is up with this penguin." And they're going to try and find out if they don't leave.
It's some of that, though. I guess also, if
shampoo is better. Hey, Mr. Penguin.
It depends on the setting, though. But sometimes you've got to be careful, though, because you get caught in this infinite loop of something happens that is unusual to the setting, and they either, A, don't realize it's unusual, or B, don't appreciate just how unusual it is. That, let's say I've got an alien race that always behaves a certain way, and one of them behaves contrary to that. And if people aren't familiar with that alien race in my setting, they may not even notice anything is out of whack. And
I shoot it.
Even if I've told them, oh, they don't normally do this, they're like, okay, they don't normally do this. They don't realize, anyway. Wait a minute.
And I say, okay, I'm still rolling for initiative.
Yeah, they don't realize.
That's why you fall back on sex and or violence.
Well, see, they don't realize that what we've got here is
you
Niagara.
You can decide that after the initiative round.
What is it without Phil on the podcast, he sends a staff? I mean, is that
you were saying, Dan.
But they don't realize that what they're seeing here is Niagara Falls flowing upward instead of downward, how really out of whack this is.
Well, as a GM who writes way too much backstory and way too much history for the settings I create, I've had to come to terms with the fact that nobody really cares. Even the best players are gonna see maybe 3% of what you do. And it's more. And I've come to realize all that stuff is way more for me than it
you
is
know,
for the player.
What's funny is in my play experience, that's not been the case.
I hate you so much.
I'm serious. The players that I have played with over the years have been very interested in the settings I write, have really asked a lot of proactive questions. The issue that I have is just not overwhelming them with what I've written. But the point is that these guys, in fact, they will ask me to run games specifically. They're like, we want to know how this plot point ends or what happens to this empire. And they will say, we want you to run a game that finishes the story.
See, and I want that. And,
by the way,
my
to
last
put this
was kind of like that. They had a little more inquisitive nature. They were reading more into the backstory, and it was going that route, but then my setting got out of control. So that was my fault.
To put this in context, when we were children, Dan and I shared a room, and we actually had a big, huge, full-sized poster map of the Inner Sphere hanging up in our bedroom, and we would actually study this map.
Yeah. And we,
you guys need to find
really
girls
dork
wow. earlier.
Yeah, you could truly need some more dates.
Didn't you have an Atari or something?
We did. We had Atari 2600 and 7800.
That you just
actually, if
at,
you
want
to hear the
played.
Backstory of the 20s,
they probably you probably only had the game.
I
want to
hear the backstory.
Text.
Okay, so the backstory to the Atari 2600 is this was back when I was in first grade, and I think Dan was either in kindergarten, even started school yet, and
I just
I wanted
out
an
of West
Atari.
Point.
You young kids.
Right. So anyway, I wanted an Atari 2600, and our mother did not want to buy us one because they were fairly pricey at the time. I think they were $179, and you got to remember that 25 years ago, that was a lot more money. And so she told me I could have one if I saved up for it. And so at the time, I got to keep like $1.60 a week of my allowance. And for literally over a year, I never spent one nickel of my allowance. And when I started getting close, I actually enlisted Dan and one of our sisters to start saving their allowance too. And we actually, over the course of, oh gosh, it must have been 15, 16 months, we actually saved up the $179.
I tell you though, Penny Arcade last year, I was told their final game
in for the Omegathon
was combat.
It was combat.
And I
one tank on one tank.
The very first home console video game I ever played was combat. I would have cleaned up.
And incidentally, after Dan and I played combat and my mother finally sent us to bed, we sat back in our bedroom in the dark singing about it.
What?
There was an Atari theme song that Getting they put as a tag game. At the end of all the television commercials. And we were actually back there singing the song.
And you kissed.
About our Atari.
And then we
and it was a magical experience for everybody.
Well, we've played combat NATO versus Warsaw Pact. Have you ever achieved that glory? Getting into the frame of time when the game came out. Would you like the game where it's the one big plane, that's the American heavy bomber, and the three little ones, those are the MiGs?
Really?
And you talk about like how everything went to crap in Europe, and
I took it the
Soviets
other way
attacked
around.
Berlin.
I took it the other way around, that the big bomber was more like a bear, or whatever they're called, the Kodiaks or the bears.
I don't know.
Whatever their big bomber were, and the fighters were our interceptors trying. Because, of course, we would not attack
no,
them.
No.
They would this only attack me. Us.
This hurts right here.
Yes. Missile Command.
Missile Command was also very very poignant.
Right.
Very relevant.
So, anyway, getting back to the real subject at hand, does anyone have anything else on introducing players to setting?
No. Make them watch Star Wars.
You know, that is another cheap way out is find a setting everyone knows.
Yep, that's what I do.
Well, you know, that's actually the reason that Carla is willing to play my sci-fi game, because we used to for years game here, and she has overheard so many of the games that I ran, and she wrote the one full-length novel that I wrote about the universe just for the sake of writing a novel. So she knows enough about that universe that she could intelligently play that game. So whenever we vote games, and if she's in on the vote, that's usually her second place vote behind Star Trek.
Well, I mean, that's why so many settings have, you know, the analogs of nations to European and nations we know, because it's something a player can easily identify
right.
with, and I think people really need that.
Yeah, and I've seen that even with experienced players in my own setting that know it very well, that know the nuances, that if I ask them to describe a particular empire, they will typically have it narrowed down to some kind of a singular archetype mm-hmm. that has made it easier for them to file away in their mind and then kind of as this header and then memorize these bullet points beneath it of how it's set up a little bit differently than that archetype.
Are you making a list in the air? I just saw you make an air
list. You just made a nuanced number.
Yeah, some people air list. Some people do air guitar, do air list. I'm sorry, Seamus, what were you saying for these assholes?
No, I just said these guys are space Nazis.
He's a zombie bugbear space Nazis.
Oh my god.
You know, actually, I did play in a game with somebody who wrote his own sci-fi universe, who does listen to the podcast, who had space Nazis and actually did them pretty
See?
Well. He did a space.
I can't even follow
the Nazis are an irresistible archetype. No. I mean, you can't.
See, that'd be different.
Who doesn't love to kill them?
I do space.
Yeah, he had sort of.
Everybody remembers Wolfenstein 3D.
He has sort of.
Dude,
I played
space Prussians.
I played the original wow. Wolfenstein when it was a 2D overhead game. But anyway, getting off of that, he had these kind of space fascists, and he did a really good job with them. And I'll have to give him credit for that. So
George Lucas did too. Worked for him, I guess.
Kinda.
Kind of ish, but
hey now,
you
don't
can't
brag
say it wasn't
on the
successful.
Empire.
No, you can't.
No, but well, and see, this is where we have a.
If you even start this, well, it did well commercially, but it was crap, and no one has taste. I will come down on you with a day of reckoning so hard you will not live long enough to never forget
no,
it.
No,
you
no.
won't enjoy your 10th anniversary judgment day.
No,
you are speaking unto Dan, not unto Chad. I would not say it was bad because it was successful, but. I would say it is my right to dislike things that
it
are
is
successful.
Your right to dislike.
So, and I don't dislike Star Wars. I really don't. I hated episodes 1, 2, and 3, but 4, 5, and 6 are fine. So, anyway, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Ta-ta.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.